Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dreams Unlimited Travel Podcast. My name is John Magi, and I will be your host. And in this episode, we're going to be telling you about the new Toy Story Land at Walt Disney World. Very exciting. I'm joined at the table by our panel of experts, Client Services Manager for Dreams Unlimited Travel, Kevin Close.
Hello, everyone.
Agent Consultant for Dreams Unlimited Travel, Tracy Heinrichs.
Hi, everyone.
And back in our production facility, we have our producer, Craig Williams.
Well, hey, howdy, hey.
Ew.
Oh, God. Alrighty.
That's what Woody says. So it's I'm theming.
Listen, no one wants...
He also says there's a snake in my boot, and that wouldn't be appropriate.
That was going to be my sign-off. Thank you very much.
Sorry about that. I ruined it.
No one wants to hear from your Woody, okay? So obviously we're in a silly mood, we're in a giddy mood, because some of us got a chance to see the new Toy Story Land.
No, that's not true. That's because we did this before, and now we're all tired.
Okay. I'm giddy and excited because I got to see Toy Story Land.
I was the one at the table that wasn't invited.
You weren't invited. You could have went yesterday when it was opening day.
And thundering and lightning.
And spent 3 hours in line. So Craig and I went to a preview. Craig was invited as media. I was invited as travel agent, travel trade is how they refer to it. And so we got there to be there 2 days before the official opening. So what was nice about that, it was less crowds, obviously, and they did a little fun stuff for us. So our experience will probably vary from other people's who have to go on a day when it's probably going to be crowded and crazy. Let's start with where Toy Story Land is located. Craig, you want to tell them where it's located in the studios?
Yeah, so if you walk in the studios from the main entrance, you're going to go about 200 yards straight down until you run into the Chinese Theater. And from there, you'll take a right and you'll head downstairs like you're going to the back of Pixar Place where Toy Story Mania is located.
This is a little too Google Maps.
Right?
I was thinking it's right before Pixar.
Yeah.
You are 900 steps.
Head towards the old Toy Story Mania and take a right.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Or like, who wants to be a millionaire?
Right.
I was just about to get there. So Pixar Place, the reason why we're not saying that anymore is because as of yesterday, the sign is now down. I believe I saw it on the night that we were there for the media event. Yep. And then yesterday, when I went for a little while, the sign is no longer there. So Pixar Place no longer exists. So now, as soon as you see Walt Disney Presents, you're going to hang a right back the only way you really can go, and you will find right in front of you Toy Story Land.
Yeah. That entrance to Toy Story Midway Mania is no more. It's been boarded up, which is kind of a shame because I always thought that was a nice street. I thought that was a well-themed area. So I don't know what they're going to do with it, but to kind of lose it is weird.
Yeah.
Is it going to be part of what's happening like with Star? Because aren't you going to be able to enter Star Wars World?
For the time being, it's going to be converted into backstage area.
Oh, okay.
So once...
He said for the time being.
Yeah. Anything can change. Oh. So with budgets and, and how Disney just is in general, they might decide, okay, well, we do need some extra pathways to help clear congestion. It might stay as backstage areas for good. I love that space. It honestly was one of the most beautiful areas in the park. I think that they did take a lot of that heart and transported it over to like the baseline tap house area because it has that same brick feeling and just really, really classy. So it's a big loss, in my opinion, for the Pixar place. But there's more to come with Pixar. So
the monkeys are gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they needed to be reused for.
Yeah.
And Toy Story Land is actually on a spot that was backstage area. They took part of their backstage and they've turned it into a whole new land. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. I think it's themed extremely well. I think it's pretty. I had a chance to see Toy Story Land in Hong Kong and that was a mess. That just looked like they literally just took whatever they found and dumped it, and it was sun-worn. You went through it with me.
I did. The other thing about that, it was landscaped, but the landscaping was new, which kind of made it look like, wow, look what we just all threw together.
Yeah, it looked it didn't look at all.
It didn't look at all cohesive.
So I thought the overall feel and the overall look of this was really great.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
So I got to go in last night. Yesterday was opening day, just for reference, because I know this isn't...
Right, we're not airing it exactly right. at the right time. But.
So I had been watching through the day and seeing the 3 hours wait to get in the land, and I was like, oh my God. So I watched through the afternoon, and right around 6 or 6.30, I saw people starting to say there were no waits. So we headed over 7.30, 8, and knew we weren't going to get on anything because lineups were pretty long by then. It was still over 200 minutes for Slinky Dog. 140 minutes for Alien Spin. One side was down, so
someone
it was backed up.
Posted, I read on Twitter that ride lasts 85 seconds.
Yeah. I did an entire ride through and was able to post it on Twitter, so you know it's not long. I can get a full ride through
right.
on Twitter.
Yeah, so we got to walk through. There was no wait when we got there. We did get to walk through. It was very, very crowded, but I thought, you know, it was moving pretty good. I didn't feel like there was times where I wasn't stuck. I loved it. It just made me happy.
Yeah.
I got to say, and I think there's going to be that the generation like Craig's that grew up with Toy Story, maybe many of them remembering Toy Story as their first kind of Pixar or favorite Pixar movie. And then for those of us in my age group where we raised our children on Toy Story. So there was a lot of nostalgia back there. And one of the gift kiosks or the merchandise kiosks was the old camper van. Remember the little camper van with the little guy in the front that he's taking? I was like, oh, I had that. So it was really like, I loved it. And you see the lights that were strung were Christmas lights. Mm-hmm. There's an area where the army men were stringing the Christmas lights. In one spot, it was a lot of those little, those things you put together, like the Tinker Toys, Tinker is that toys? What they're called?
Yep. Tinker Toys.
And then there was one area where it was a big pencil that was holding up the light. So it was just tons of, and I feel like every time I walk through there for the first several times, I'm going to see something new, cool. Something a little bit different. We actually have Fast Pass for Monday morning, so we're going to go and spend a little bit more time in there and actually try to ride attractions and stuff. But for last night, I just wanted to get a feel for it, and I really liked it. I mean, it's not Pandora. Like, I want to set...
Yes.
I don't want to oversell it. I don't want to put your expectations up to Pandora, because I had zero interest or expectation for Pandora and was blown away and continue to be blown away every time I'm in that area. Toy Story Land, it's not that, but for what it is, I think it's been well done.
Yeah,
I like it.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. Like, I've been getting a lot of flack from people thinking that I was being overly negative about Toy Story Land leading up to its opening. It wasn't that. I was just trying to set the expectation levels, because I think so many people believed that this was going to be on the same level as Pandora, because it's the keyword that Disney is using and overusing over and over again, and that's immersion. And Pandora truly is an immersive experience in every way, shape, and form. You truly do walk in there and believe that you are in a complete different place. Toy Story Land did not look like that as it was leading up to it, with the pictures they were releasing and the concept art in general. And at least my opinion is, it's not immersive. It is highly, highly themed. It is very well themed.
I give it like 95% immersive. I give it like, if you're in certain areas, you feel like you're in a different land, but then you turn to the left and you see Star Wars Land spires.
See,
you look to the right and you kind of say, well, there's a wall blocking the...
What number would you give it, Craig?
I maybe like the complete opposite, like 5%.
I would give it, I think somewhere around, I'd be in the middle, probably 60-65%, because I feel like in Pandora, it's not just what I'm seeing, it's what I'm smelling, it's what I'm hearing, it's what I'm feeling.
Yes.
So to me, that describes immersive more. Whereas with Toy Story, what I'm seeing is fantastic, but there aren't other senses being involved. You know, I'm hearing the Toy Story music, which is nice. No, I couldn't smell.
Smell under Andy's bed.
Yeah, exactly. I had a teenage boy. I know what it smells like under there. So you want it to be immersive.
Well, but that's what I agree with. It ends with the theming in terms of the immersion, because the background loop is just songs from Toy Story, and there isn't the extra sensory effects. The cast members aren't making you feel like you're a toy like they do in Pandora, where they make you feel like a traveler to the world of Pandora. So
I got a lot of thanks for playing.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, that's kind of weird. That's a weird sort of tagline to give the cast members.
Yeah. And not everything has to be super highly immersive, but when you bill it as that, and then it doesn't actually fit that, that's where the issue and disconnect is. But
what do you think the age, the demographic is for this? What do you think the target demographic is for this?
I have an opinion. I do too. First. Go ahead.
Okay, you want me to go first?
You go first.
Yeah. I'll go first. I think it's like what I said. I think it's the people who have the nostalgic connection to Toy Story. So whether it's the kids that grew up with it, I think the younger kids now, because there's going to be more Toy Story movie coming out, a new one. I think it's kind of my age a little bit too, because I've seen all, there's a lot of little.
Do you think the rides were designed with you in mind? The attractions?
Possibly, but probably not. But I don't think it. I think maybe I'm different because I don't really come from the point of view of attractions, because they're not the focus for me. So maybe other people would feel differently. But no, I don't think I was. I think probably younger. I have a reason
for asking this.
Good.
My reason is you're talking about it not being immersive. And I think to myself, is it not immersive because you're an adult?
I'm going to take my opinion of the demographic. I think there's no specific age demographic. I think, as Tracy said, if this is what you like and you like Toy Story, you're going to enjoy it.
I guess my point these attractions don't sound to me like they were aimed at adults.
But however, adults can certainly ride them and enjoy them.
Adults can ride almost everything. Anything. But I don't think rides are attractions. I keep saying rides. Attractions are aimed. These attractions don't seem to be aimed at adults.
Kevin, I see where you're going with this, and I do agree. If you were probably a kid, maybe 3 to 7, 8, you would actually feel like there is, once you step in here, there is nothing else, and you are truly in Andy's backyard. You see the giant 25-foot footprints, and you have that belief that you have shrunk down and you're in this different world.
I think
world.
That's actually my point. I wasn't belittling anything. I'm not suggesting that it's not aimed at adults or adults won't enjoy it, but we're talking about immersion as for adults.
Yeah.
And I don't know that this land is immersive for adults, but I think if you were...
Yeah, if you are a younger kid, you are going to believe.
Under a teenager, I think you're going
to
feel.
There's one more sort of level to this too, and this is my negative of it, but this will change, is that the trees and the foliage are all small. This is a new land. They've just planted everything in there. So as that stuff matures, I think it's going to feel more immersive.
That always makes it feel new and less than complete.
Yeah. Well, that's where I know I want to shut it off, the critic side. When I was in there last night with my wife, I was, I was just living through her, and she was like just lit up, so excited, so happy. And I can stop thinking about the little things on it. But when I'm in work mode, I'm thinking about the little things. And the little things are, well, we're in Andy's backyard. And the foliage doesn't match what you would expect in a backyard unless the grass was cut so, so tiny that it looked dead in there. And then little things like, okay,
well, it's the summer. It's not getting a lot of water.
Yeah, well, and then also, like, you walk in and you see Woody that's massive right away in front of you, and Buzz who's massive, but then you also see their characters walking around in there who are much smaller, and you're smaller as people, so things like that just don't level.
I think that was true of Honey, I Shrunk the Audience area too. I don't think that was themed. I don't think that was immersive for adults. I mean, I think sometimes
you have to... From a child's perspective. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. I can see the potential. I can see that it's going to appeal to a wide range of people. I think that adults taking kids are going to enjoy it, as well as the Disney fan is going to enjoy it. So again, I think it just needs the chance to mature to really be as immersive as some people want.
Yeah, and I will say that Slinky Dog Dash is a very fun coaster. It's, in my opinion, it is in this gray area between Barnstormer and Mine Train, but then also Big Thunder Mountain. So it's definitely more intense and more thrilling than Barnstormer and Mine Train, but not quite as much as Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Someone said, I posted a video and someone said, oh, it's going very slow. And I said, when I was standing there, it didn't feel like it was going very slow around me. It wasn't Space Mountain fast.
Well, the launches do actually go decently fast. I don't know the exact mile per hour count just sitting here. The launches feel fast. The thing is that right after the launches, they do a certain roller coaster move where it just has enough speed to go up over the hill.
Right.
So it feels like you're going to stall out. And that's not because of bad design or anything. That's a tactic to help make it scary. You're like, oh, are we going to make it? Are we going to make it? And then you go.
And then you hit into it. Then you turn into a bank, yep, which just feels faster.
Yeah, and it also helps maintain the speed, relies less on having to brake you to slow you down. So there are thrilling elements in it. And with the sound effects that, like, when you first take off from the station, you can hear the springs sounding like coils as they're starting to bend and stretch. And, you know, Slinky Dog's actually talking at certain points in the ride as you're going along too. So it is a very fun ride. And I think now when I have kids one day, the first coaster I would want to take them on would be Slinky Dog Dash.
I thought the queue was great. I thought the queue was very fun way of doing it.
Oh yeah, no, it's just, I mean, it's essentially boxes. It's Andy set up these boxes from like the actual Slinky Dog toy set and then other random boxes to help build the queue and using the instruction manuals
and coloring pages and crayons, and it's like he colored it in.
So
I think it was very well done. I did not ride Slinky Dog. I went up to it and I looked in it and I thought, is it worth being in pain to try this ride? And it wasn't for me. I knew I wasn't going to fit. I knew I wasn't going to be comfortable. But again, you know, I am not an average size person. But I think that did your legs fit, Craig?
Yes. This is, I have complained about Mine Train from day one, that it was built way too small, and it really was. They have fixed that with Slinky Dog Dash. It was actually comfortable to get in. I wasn't in pain or anything. And I will say, I'm not saying this in a mean way to anyone, but I did see a lot of bigger people getting on it. So I think that it's ultimately going to come down to your level of comfort.
Comfort, yeah.
So
one of the things that someone said to me was, you should have rode in the first car. That for some reason the first car had more space.
Maybe more leg room.
Maybe
there.
More leg room.
Yeah.
I felt more my issue was going to be side to side because there is a seat divider. Yeah. It's not a tall seat divider, but it's a little hump between the two people.
Yeah. Like I genuinely believe, based on other people that I saw get on it, that you would be able to ride. You just might not be comfortable for that minute and a half.
Okay.
So
would you say the seating is similar to Big Thunder?
No, just Big Thunder doesn't have a division in between the two.
So you can slide
back and forth. So
it looked a little to me more like Splash, but not quite as deep.
Yeah, kind of like Splash now that they've installed the lap bars that come down in there, where it's like, okay, well, before I liked sitting in the middle, but now I have to choose a side.
What is the restraint system in Slinky Dog? Is it a bar?
It's a lap bar that pulls down, but it is a lap bar that has sides on it, so your legs do have to fit in between.
Yeah, that's another issue I have.
It sounds, when you describe it, to be, I don't know, more fun, funner, better than Seven Dwarfs. Would you describe?
Yeah, no,
I might be in the minority, but I don't get the hype on that one at all.
I've never ridden it because every time I looked at it, I went,
yeah, it's tight. I find it tight, even like leg wise. And I mean, I'm 5 foot nothing, so I'm not super comfortable in there. But I find the coaster itself, the attraction itself, is kind of, you're just like, oh, that was it. And still, the weights continue to be, you know, 150, 200 minutes all the time. So I think I must be just missing the point.
Right.
But
no,
that's fine.
This, I would say it was as great as like the animatronic elements of Mine Train are. When that's kind of the centerpiece of the attraction, it makes the other two like thrilling sections a little cheap, where this didn't go for that. It just went for the thrills. And so based on that, I think it succeeds. The one bummer is, and we knew from early concept art what it could be, and then even in the attraction right at the loading area, it shows Andy's diagrams for how the coaster was supposed to be. So that's the bad part, is you see the elements that got chopped as the budget got chopped, and there would have been a couple extra little cool additions, but hopefully maybe one day. I mean, the whole thing is, just based on first day feedback, the place is a massive success.
Yeah.
One of the things I do like about Slinky Dog is that it actually is out, the track itself is out into the land, which is not doesn't happen a lot at Disney attractions. They're contained. So this felt like it spilled over into the land and you were there underneath Slinky Dog riding around above you.
Yeah.
So will cool. It will close in rain?
Yes, that's
or
that's,
it's just thunder.
If
there's thunder in the area or something.
If it's it's been so long since I've worked at Disney now, I think it's the same as Universal. As soon as lightning is within 5 miles of the area, then it will shut down. It can run in rain. And it can run if lightning is off in the distance, but then once it hits the 5 miles, it will close for that. And that's a good point to bring up, though. This is now in this state of Hollywood Studios. I saw it on Twitter yesterday. It didn't dawn on me. It's the first outdoor attraction since Hollywood Studios has started this revamp. Everything else is technically indoors or enclosed, and this is the one thing that isn't. So yeah, it will close during inclement weather, so keep that in mind
for sure. And what is the name of the other ride in Toy Story Land?
Are we just going to go by its acronym?
Or no, we're not going to go by its acronym.
Alien Swirling Saucers.
That is, you know, what they're using on the Diz boards is the acronym. But yeah, Alien Swirling Saucers. I had a chance to ride it. I know you guys rode it for sure. I know it's a short ride. It's kind of a carnival ride. You know, it's based on a carnival ride, but it's still fun.
Yeah, we watched a ride through. It looked fun.
Isn't it the same ride as Tomaters?
It is.
Yeah, which I love. Yeah. And it's a weird thing, but it's one of those things you get on it and you just giggle for the minute and a half that you're on it.
It's just fun. It's just a fun ride. I want to talk about the seating on this ride because it's something that surprised me was that they did one big seatbelt.
Yeah.
Because I got in and it looked like there was a bar. And I'm like, why isn't the bar coming down? And the lady's like, there's a seatbelt behind you, sir.
Yeah.
So there's one giant seatbelt. I was very comfortable. Easily Kevin and I could have fit in that ride.
Yeah.
Even leg room would have been fine. So
yeah, they're doing the seating for it is they're allowing two adults and one child to be in the middle. So we asked if three adults are allowed to do that because back at Disney California Adventure a few years ago, we were able to convince them to let me, Will, and Corey on Tomaters all together. And we just barely fit, but it made that ride so much better because of it. But they're not playing that game here at Alien Swirling Saucers. But no, it is a fun ride. There's a whole bunch of different music loops that play during it. It's best seen at night because there's so much lighting effects happening in there. It kind of looks like a half disco, half rave going on in there, but it's like electronic Toy Story music, and so you'll hear like electronic remixes of You've Got a Friend in Me, We Belong Together, all that.
Was it louder
yes
during regular park hours in the party than the
yes
event?
It was. I think that's because they were still doing shoots inside the area while we were in there, so they had the music piped down. But last night when I wrote it, it was loud, and it was like, okay, now I get it. Because the first time I wrote it, it's like,
I had to like listen. I'm like, what exactly is going on? Because I couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was because there was an event going on, and they didn't want to disturb.
And that was
the media recording stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a fun ride. Again, it's like Kevin pointed out, it is Mater's Junkyard Jamboree to a T. It just has the electronic music instead of Larry the Cable Guy singing terrible songs, which. That's what makes that attraction so good. But it's fun. Don't expect the most intense attraction you'll ever go on. Just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, I think that's a good point for both of these.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This isn't, you know, going to be super, super thrill rides. They're just more fun rides at Disney. Let's talk about the food option.
I can.
Okay, good, because I'm trying to find my menu. So
you are all good. I actually, when I went in, I just suffered through the lines and the lack of seating and got some of the food. And so the one dining option there is Woody's Lunchbox. It is a quick service window. It's not a full quick service restaurant. You don't walk inside. You walk up, you place your order, you get it from the window, and then you go to the seating section, which has a tiny, tiny, tiny seating area for it. And they just did not plan ahead for how popular it was going to be, which is a shame considering they saw what happens when you come up with a solid menu, people are going to want to eat there. And a lot of people are, but there's just no seating for it. So
I like the seating. I think the seating was very cool and very ingenious. One of the seats was, you know, a Baby Bell, cheese wheel. It was mm-hmm. a baby bell cheese wheel cut in half, and the back was turned into the back of the seat. So very clever, very ingenious seating. It's crazy that it's so small.
Yeah.
They should have made it much bigger. I'm going to read off some of the menu items.
Please.
Real quick. Sandwiches and more. Barbecue biscuit. Brisket melt.
Yes.
Three cheese sandwich. Monte Cristo. Smoked turkey, tomato, lettuce on a multigrain bread. Tachos. And mini Baby Bell snack cheese, because that's who sponsors mm-hmm. it. The desserts, a lunchbox tart. I had some of these at the party. They were really good.
Yeah.
There's kids' meals, which are grilled cheese and turkey sandwiches. There's a specialty drink. And, of course, there's soda and other drinks available as well. So it's not, you know, fine dining, you know.
Oh, no, no. It's not fine dining at all. It's just... It's sandwiches. However,
they're really good.
Yeah,
when I tasted it, was really good.
There's a reason why Joey's favorite food is sandwiches. it's because when a sandwich is really well done, it's delicious. And the pricing for it, the most expensive sandwich is the brisket melt. That's $12.99. So, like, the Monte Cristo is $11.49. We're talking reasonable prices. They come with a side. Yep. The sides are a tomato basil soup dipper. Which is, it's a decent portion of it. There's a vegetable pasta salad that is like chock full of olives. So if you don't like olives, might want to avoid that. Or then you can get tater tots. So it's hearty portions for the price. The brisket we had at the media event, and then I got it just separately to see if it held up from when they were trying to schmooze us with it. And I will say it is just as delicious. And despite the long lines, the quality was pretty much there. The brisket was a little dry, but that's, I said to Tracy on the way over, when you slather anything in barbecue sauce and cheese, it's going to make up for it anyways. And the Monte Cristo I found to be very good, not like a Disneyland Monte Cristo, so don't expect that. But
yeah, it's like sort of a miniature almost.
Monte Cristo. It's not deep fried. It's got all the ingredients. It's got the ham, the turkey, the Swiss, and the raspberry jam just on like a grilled brioche toast. But it's not that big deep fried madness that you'll get in Disneyland, and then you dip it in the raspberry jam and all that. But I found it to be good still. Kylie hated it, but, you know, different tastes for different people.
I smuggled out two of the toaster things for Kevin. Yeah. What did you think?
Something I can talk about. Yay!
I'm trying to include you in
the
conversation.
They were good. They were very sweet, but they were very good. And I ate both of them, so
it was like
there's no complaining there, right?
They were like Pop-Tarts?
Like a homemade Pop-Tart, and this had chocolate inside.
No, it was more like a brown sugar thing. There was no chocolate in it.
There was chocolate inside.
No, it was a brown sugar mix. It was good. It was delicious.
It had bacon on top.
Little... crispy nuggets of bacon, yeah.
They do have breakfast there. Am I right on that?
Yes,
they are going to be serving breakfast as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah. No, it's the tarts. Those are what started at the Festival of the Arts a couple years back.
Yes, that's right.
They really started to get going. And so the two options are the raspberry lunchbox tart and it is a chocolate hazelnut, but I think that's the topping.
Yeah, I thought it was, they were billed as chocolate
hazelnut. Yeah, I think the inside is like the brown sugar. I didn't have this one. Kylie's allergic to nuts, so hazelnut involved, stay away. But yeah, I think it was the chocolate hazelnut on top and then the bacon pieces and a little extra. They look delicious. And the pastry, if you don't like Pop-Tarts, try it anyways because it's not that hard pastry. No, this is soft and flaky.
It's more of a puff pastry folded over.
Yeah.
So I just sort of to wrap up, I think it was great. I had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be appealing to a lot of people.
I'm looking forward to going back.
Yeah.
I think multiple times I'm going to see things, notice things differently.
A lot of detail. I thought there was a lot of detail.
Yeah, I thought so too. And honestly, when I walked in, I just felt happy. It made me smile. My husband and I, we were laughing, and there was a couple things I was like, oh, look at that. Remember that. Remember we did, you know. So it was just a happy place to be. I just enjoyed it. It was fun.
I agree.
I would just say my only thoughts still are manage expectations. Right. Don't expect the moon. You'll probably be disappointed. If you wait 6 hours for Slinky Dog Dash, you're probably going to be disappointed in it. But if you just... if you know what you're looking forward to and you have specific times that you say, okay, I'm willing to wait 2 hours for Slinky Dog. I'm willing to wait an hour for Alien Swirling Saucers, stuff like that. I think you'll enjoy it. And just if you can't find enjoyment in that, just watch the faces of the kids running around, because they're just truly, truly happy in there.
Agreed. Agreed. Excellent. Thank you guys for participating in that conversation. Thank you, everybody at home, for listening and watching. We hope you have a great week. We hope you have a great vacation, and go to Toy Story Land.